OAK Files, the ultimate Raiders podcast with Nate Lundy.
Talking Raiders with Q Myers, blackholebanter.com, also a host on ESPN Central Texas, AM 1660. But like I said, covering the silver and black for blackholebanter.com. He's on Twitter at yourboyq254. Q, let's start here. There's a lot of buzz around the NFL media nationally about this Raiders team, about them, you know, taking a step forward, being more of not just a thorn in the side in some of these games in the AFC West or throughout the AFC, but actually, going in and being a real threat. How do you think this team is handling that kind of pressure, the fact that they are being talked about so much?
Really, I think the team is going to handle the pressure really well, only because of their leadership. And I think that Jack Del Rio is a guy who can tell them and guide them in a way to say, hey, there's a lot of talk, there's a lot of expectations, things look really good on paper, but things get done on the field. You know, championships are won on the field, and so that's where the focus is. And I think Jack Del Rio is the right guy for the job because he's been around winners, and he knows how to win. You know, so I think that he'll be able to keep these guys who are, majority of them are really, really young, will be able to keep them focused and say, look, guys, we are not there yet. And expectations are huge for the Raiders, like you mentioned. I mean, they're talking they have to win the AFC West. You know, that's being talked about throughout the media, but that's for us to do. That's for the media to do, for people to talk about, it's for fans to get excited about. But the pressure that goes with the players, I think that they just have to tune out all that talk that goes around them. And I think Jack Del Rio is going to do a really, really good job of being able to do that and just focus on football. Get on the field and do what you have to do to win games. And the Raiders' biggest issue with winning games is usually finishing games. So they have to learn how to finish on the road, and just go out and play sound football. So that's the task at hand going into 2016.
Q, we'll talk about the defense here in a minute. I don't think it's a surprise for a Jack Del Rio team to have a good defense. But over on the offensive side of things, what do you credit the success to? The fact that Derek Carr is performing well, that they've got a good young backfield that's performing well. How is this offense getting it done?
Well, I think Derek Carr, it all starts there. He is the leader of the offense, and now he has pieces around him. I mean, when he first came into the league, you see the guys he was throwing the ball to, or you see the guys that were trying to run the ball behind him, just wasn't there. The offensive line wasn't set up. Now they have a solid offensive line, and they do, like you mentioned, have a run game. They have to execute the run game. It has to be better than it was last season because at times it just disappeared. They can't have that. They have to be consistent. They have to be able to run the rock first and then have Derek Carr use his weapons that are around him. And Reggie McKenzie has done a great job of putting weapons around him. You look at that roster a couple years ago and you look at the roster today, and it's a world of difference. You know, there's actually teams that were looking at the guys that the Raiders cut to add them to their team. That didn't happen in years past. So the Raiders have a lot of good talent around Derek Carr, and he's the kind of guy that, you know, he's the kind of quarterback that I really love. And and what I mean by that is the fact that he's the guy that you know and you trust will be in the playbook. He's going to be at home getting rest. He's going to be doing what he has to do to take care of his body. He realizes that this is not college. This is not Fresno State where you just sling it around the yard and score a bunch of points. This is the NFL. It's a whole different beast. So I think with him being more mature than his age and being around the game at an early age with the help of his brother, he just kind of already gets it, you know, and a lot of times that's the biggest problem for quarterbacks coming into the league is they don't get it. They don't get it right away. Derek Carr, for his sake, and it was really a blessing in disguise, beat out Matt Schaub when he was a rookie. You know, he wasn't going to start the season. That wasn't the plan. But in preseason game number four, which is surprising because nobody paid attention to that game, he had a really good game against Seattle, won the starting job, and he hasn't looked back since. So I think that helped him progress, even though obviously the first couple seasons weren't great. The first year was, what, 3 wins? Wasn't great at all, but it gave him that experience. So I think Derek Carr is what makes everything go on the offensive side of the ball, but you have to give a ton of credit to Reggie McKenzie for putting a lot of talent around him. and then have that offensive line that could protect them.
When you look at this receiving core, I kind of feel like Amari Cooper last year left some plays, left some yards out there on the field, had some drops or had some issues like that. Have you seen some improvement out of him during training camp and in the preseason for him to improve his overall catch rate?
He looks like he's concentrating a little bit more, and I agree with you. He did leave a lot of yards out there, a lot of catches out there. He had 18 drop balls last season, and that you just can't have that, not from your number one guy. But to his credit, I believe he was thinking about his next play before he actually caught the ball. He was thinking about how can I move to get the extra yards, because Amari Cooper, he'd catch the ball, and he would run, and he'd make guys miss. And he was a great yak guy, yards after the catch. He was great at that. But he has to complete the whole process, and it starts with catching the ball. So I think that was his number one focus in training camp. I think that was his number one focus during the preseason. And you didn't see a lot of them in the preseason, and that's good. You don't want your number one guy to get injured. But just knowing that the guy is a guy who really is a attention-to-detail type guy, I think that this season you'll see a lot more from Amari Cooper. He'll realize that, hey, I need to make sure, I secure the ball and then I go. And he has to stay healthy. I mean, another reason why he wasn't effective down the stretch of 2015 is because he wasn't healthy. So he just has to make sure he takes care of his body. It's a part of being a rookie, how you change. You go from being in college to the NFL. It's a different animal. It's a different beast, And so he's going to realize that. He's going to work on that. And I think you'll see a lot from him this year. I mean, when you have the yardage and the catches that he had in 2015, that's something really positive for Raider fans to get excited about. But again, those 18 drops, they have to be cut in half, cut in, whatever, cut down to five maybe. I don't know. He has to do a lot better than he did as far as drops, and I think he will this year because, again, attention to detail is something that Amari Cooper really works at.
When you look at Michael Crabtree on the other side of him, we know about that duo, and they certainly, Crabtree had a great year last year, especially bouncing back after a really bad season with San Francisco. But beyond that, there's not a lot of proven commodities at this point from the receiver position. Once you get past those two, what's your take on the rest of the depth that's there, Q?
Seth Roberts is good. He's not great. He's a good complimentary number three, but I really expect this year to be a Clive Walford breakout year. We heard a lot about him in his rookie season that he was basically a steal and that a lot of guys are real high on him. And I think that this is the year that he really, really has a breakout year. I think that a lot of people are going to be concentrating on Cooper. A lot of guys are going to concentrate on Crabtree because they complement each other so well. Crabtree is the professional's professional, and I was not high on him when the Raiders grabbed him. All I heard was horror stories from San Francisco. So I'm thinking, oh, man, this guy's going to be bad and a bad influence on this rookie wide receiver. But it was the complete opposite, and he was such a compliment to Amari Cooper and really taught him the ropes. I think that a reason that Amari had the season he had, you have to credit Michael Crabtree for kind of taking him under his wing and teaching him the ropes of the NFL. So you have to credit him for that. But again, you look at Clive Walford. He's going to be a guy to watch out for. And another guy that I have a sneaky feeling is going to really be effective in the pass game is the rookie out of Texas Tech, DeAndre Washington. I'm really, really high on him. I've seen him catch the ball numerous times for Texas Tech. I mean, he was a guy that I've seen him catch four touchdown passes in a game. So I know the guy can get it done. I think he's going to be a real weapon out of the backfield, somebody that the Raiders and Raider fans are going to really get used to really quickly. You watch out for DeAndre Washington.
Q, we know how good Khalil Mack is, but if you were looking at his game, is there anything that if you could say, I just want him to get better at blank, is there anything that you would fill that blank in, or is he right where you want him to be?
I just want him to be more consistent. I really do. I mean, you look at Khalil Mack's overall sack numbers from 2015, and it was 15, and that's great. But if you take away five that he had against Denver, it's 10. You know what I mean? And that's good. That's good for a second-year guy. You want to see him. You want to see him improve off his rookie year, which he only had four sacks. But people are talking about Khalil Mack could have possibly 22 sacks or 23 sacks. Look, I just want him to be consistent all year. He doesn't need to get five in one game, but two a game, one a game. I want to see him consistently back there, sacking the quarterback instead of coming in bunches. And that's what it was last season. They really came in bunches. He'd get three or four in one game, and then he'd get five. And then he wouldn't have any for a couple games. Then all of a sudden, two or three more. You know, and I just need to see him back there being more disruptive. He's been great against the run. He's a guy that, you know, that was his weakness, so-called, coming into the league. It has never been a weakness for him since he's been in the league. So just consistently being in the backfield, getting after the quarterback, even if he doesn't sack him every time, to knock him down, you know, let him know that he's there. He has a running mate now in Bruce Irvin that I think is really going to help him because they won't be able to double-team him. So he should, on paper, and on paper everything looks great, he should have a better season than last year. And it doesn't necessarily mean he has more sacks, but he's more consistent throughout the whole season. That's what's the biggest key for me. It's not really the number. It's just do it all season long, all 16 games. And if you're doing that all 16 games, the chances of you being in the playoffs are great.
Q, last one for you. As you watch the game on Sunday in New Orleans, where the Raiders will go on the road for week one, what's the one thing they're going to be looking for?
Just they need to come out and play like they're playing a home game. When you think of Raiders and you think of on the road, it's a scary thing. They really never play good on the road games, especially the early start games, you know, and that's going to be a 10 a.m. West Coast game. So it's one of those things that, for some reason, the Raiders cannot shake that. It's just hard for them to get off to a good start on the road. They really need to start strong. They can't come out like they did last season against the Bengals, even though that was at home, and they just basically no-showed after having a bunch of hype going into the year. Well, they're having a bunch of hype going into this year. You have a tough opponent in Drew Brees. I mean, he's not going to lay down for anybody, and he knows how to throw the ball all around the yard. So that's going to be, you know, the defense. It's going to be a test for them. They're going to have to come out there and really, really make some plays. Sean Smith is a guy that, you know, was brought over from the Chiefs. I like the acquisition, but I need to see him complete plays. And he left a few out there during the preseason, balls that should have been intercepted that were right in his hands, and he missed them. He dropped them. He let them go. You know, I mean, it's nice to knock a ball down, but you also need to complete the play. You need to complete the process. Make the interception. Take the ball back the other way. That's what they brought you in for. So the defense is going to be tested right off the bat. Drew Brees is no slouch. He's not a rookie. You know, he's a seasoned veteran. He's a great quarterback. It's going to be all in the defense. You want to talk about consistency with Khalil Mack? You're going to have to knock him down three or four times. I mean, you really are. You're going to have to get Khalil Mack back there and get in Brees' grill the whole game. Just make him very uncomfortable, because if not, he's going to pick you apart. So, you know, get off to a good start. Act like you're playing at home. You should have a lot of fans there. The Raider fans travel really well. And, you know, put that defense out there first and make a statement. That's what they have to do to get that win week one.
He's on Twitter at yourboyq254, covering the Raiders, blackholebanter.com, also AM1660, ESPN Central Texas. Got everything covered with Q Myers. Q, really appreciate the time. Thanks for making it and joining us on the podcast.
Absolutely. Hit me up anytime, man. I'd love to be a part of it. I love this stuff.
Stay tuned. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did. But they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am an IA, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, And I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team, and Donovan McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford. I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott. It could be a huge plus for them. But that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. It goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement obviously Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? if they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team, but that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. David Johnson's pretty good. They want to run the ball well, and if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. You're going to play great defense. You know, typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo if, as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bills team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do. More so than any team in the league, they morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo. You know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've played the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience. One team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. Each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of Overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there was a quarterback who's played, you know, in about the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five. Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes a national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football, you know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.